Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Brian Boyles, executive publisher, and Nancy Dixon, executive editor of New Orleans and the World, 1718 to 2018, the Tricentennial Anthology. We'll also hear from Cassie Prine, whose new book is Bayou St. John, A Brief History. It's a great pleasure to welcome my next two guests to The Reading Life. Nancy Dixon is the editor of that great anthology, N.O. Lit, 200 Years of New Orleans Literature. She is program director and professor of English at Dillard University. And here with her is Brian Boyles, vice president for content for the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, publisher of Louisiana Cultural Vistas, and author of New Orleans Boom and Blackout, 100 Days in America's Coolest Hotspot. Today, we're talking about their recent joint project, New Orleans and the World, 1718 to 2018, the Tricentennial Anthology. Nancy is the executive editor of this terrific book, and Brian is the executive publisher. So, Nancy, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
You too, Brian.
It's great to be here.
So, this is a huge project. I mean, was this always in the Tricentennial plans for the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, Brian?
We had been brainstorming about something meaningful that we could do for the Tricentennial, and knowing that there were lots of projects in the works and partnerships that were forming, I think we really wanted to stay with our strengths and figure out how, as an organization, as a publisher, we could do something that would contribute what we know and the network of folks we work with to do something that will last for a long time. And I think that this book really is a result of not just the last year and a half, but 45 years of LEH history of building up that network and building up that credibility to do a project like this.
And you garnered some terrific community partners for this as well.
We were really fortunate. Our executive director, Miranda Restovich, and Kara Banish from the New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau had been kicking around some ideas. Mark Romig and Miranda had been kicking around ideas, Mark's perspective from the NOLA 2018 Foundation, to see what we could do around the history of the city that I think could be conveyed in this elegant but also impactful way. Fortunately, when we got further along into the talks, they were more than willing to be that strong partner that allow us to really produce something beautiful. And I think that they also were fascinated with this idea of New Orleans and the world and looking at it as a world city, one that has impacted and influenced the world in so many ways, and also looking at ways that that impact has made so many people come to the city. You know,
right.
What exactly is that magnetism, and what has it been for 300 years? That really resounded for them. And I have to say, as partners, you know, once they gave us the green light, they were a really good sounding board throughout. They were also really willing for us to drive this narrative and to give the histories that I think are in full scope and really show the good and the bad. But I think overall, this amazing story of a city that's evolved and maintained that world position despite its ups and downs.
Well, Nancy, I can just imagine thinking, 300 years, how am I going to pick and choose? How am I going to organize this? And you came up with these wonderful organizing principles that are intriguing and flexible, that kind of gave you some room. So talk a little bit about that process.
First of all, we had a crackerjack editorial board. In our initial meeting, we were creating these different sections, and then we realized that we were putting the cart before the horse. So what we did is everybody got busy writing and editing and revising. And then when we got all the articles, it was a little more of an organic process. We knew we wanted people. We knew we wanted places and spaces and places. And we also, of course, had to celebrate the city. But we needed to look at what made the city the city. We needed to look at slavery. We needed to look at civil rights. And we needed to look at, of course, the lighthearted parts of the city and customs that we have that attract so many tourists, but also what really made the city what it is. And spirits and sin and conflict and freedom. We also wanted to end on a positive note of resilience, rebirth, renewal. And so Dr. Michael White's second line seemed like a perfect way to wrap up this book, just like it's a perfect way to wrap up lives and celebrations of the city.
I know, that was the perfect note on which to end. You really couldn't have had anything better. And it's six wonderful sections: people, space and place, conflict and freedom, spirits and sin, cuisine and culture, of course, sounds and renewal. And I mean, that captures everything in so many ways. So talk a little bit about this idea of New Orleans in the world. That's one of the great things about this anthology, that sense of this is how we presented ourselves. This is how the world has come to look at us.
Well, we, of course, went back to, you know, Bienville and even before that, with the Riches article and the diluvial mud. And then we started looking at the city and its impact on the world's impact on the city. Of course, probably, the Native Americans were here first, but the biggest, earliest impact was slavery. And with slavery came cotton and sugarcane and industry. And that is really when in the mid-19th century, when New Orleans did have such an impact on the world. It is an urban center, the highest population of free people of color, the largest slave markets, the largest cotton exports, one of the third largest ports in the world. And, you know, it was all on the backs of slaves. And after the Civil War, New Orleans, it wasn't the gem of the South that it once was, but it still attracts people. Tourism, you know, being our largest industry now, but we also have the oil industry that Jack Davis writes about with the boom and bust on Poydras Street.
That was one of my favorite essays. It was so interesting and unexpected.
It really is. And the photo that goes along with it, I had never seen before, the building of the Superdome.
Right.
It's fantastic. And, you know, in the Saints and Poydras Street and we all know that we can't go anywhere and tell someone that we're from New Orleans that, oh, New Orleans. I mean, and so no matter how small and intimate our impact might be now, it still exists.
Right.
And we're still the music, the culture, you know, it's still world renowned.
We're still beloved, baby.
They sure are.
So both of you were not only editor and publisher, but you also contributed to this book. And I want you to talk about some of the things that you wrote, like Brian. Of course, you wrote about the post-Katrina Super Bowl. So talk a little bit about that as a marker.
Well, I think that sometimes we can exaggerate what sports mean in the world.
Yeah.
But I think that even the farther away we get from that game, the more we do see it as what felt like this turning point or this moment of declaration, without overstating all the things that had led up to that and all the people who had contributed to bringing the city back. It certainly was something that's almost indescribable, that feeling that we all had. People talk about it in the same terms as winning a war. And it kind of felt like that. And what I've tried to do, I think, with that essay and talking about that event and my own memory of it, is to look at what contributed to that feeling. You know, both the very interesting history of the Saints, which I think is peculiarly New Orleans. You know, it has its ups and downs. It has its breaks. It has its local flair. It's completely unique in NFL history, but also the way that that thing intersects with how people look at us. You know, the team really was the way that people saw the city that year. And I think, as I tried to write about in the book, a lot of people, the first images they saw after the initial storm and impact was that Monday Night Football game against Atlanta. When we came back to the Dome, that's not something to be taken lightly. You know, I think that when you have millions of people seeing New Orleans for the first time on network television after seeing these just horror scenes and all that media coverage, and then something insane happens with the block kick and Steve Gleason, you have to put that in some perspective. And I think with all the essays in this book, we kept asking ourselves, how does that fit with the theme? You know, how does that fit in the theme of New Orleans and the world? I actually think the Super Bowl one was one of the easier picks because the stage is just so huge for that. And that victory really, I feel like, changed the way that people were looking at the city from without as much as from within.
Right. Now, Nancy, you write about such diverse topics in this book. You have that wonderful piece about Les Sennels, the poets. So talk about that. And the Vietnamese, yeah. Which that was a wonderful piece, too. I love that. But that shows your range as a New Orleans writer and scholar.
And my love for Vietnamese food.
Well, that too.
The Les Sennels, I remember when Skip Gates first wrote about Les Sennels, and I kind of read it in a part of his book, and I was amazed. I didn't know. Here I was living in New Orleans, and I didn't know who they were. And so I've really been studying them ever since, and I've published articles on them. And naturally, I wanted to include them because so few people know that the first anthology of American literature by and published by and written by African Americans was published here in New Orleans. Many of them had published in French publication with a white publisher, but right after that, they decided to do it themselves. And it was a time when their status was changing in the city, and they weren't pleased about it. And so they wanted to do this, like I said, they wanted to do this themselves, and Armand Lanousse took this on, and with 17 poets, one of whom, Victor Séjour, moved to France and to great acclaim, became a playwright of great acclaim. He also wrote what is considered the first short story by an African-American in the United States, and that's La Mulâtre, or The Mulatto, which is, it's anthologized. I teach it in my classes. It's a violent look at slavery from Haiti, the Haitian Revolution, then coming here to New Orleans, which is what he did, his family did.
I want you to talk a little bit about the message of this book. It must have sustained both of you during the work of this book, which was so long, over so much time. And you know, you must have had this kind of steady direction you were marching in.
I think having that theme of New Orleans and the world was super important. But I want to say, too, that when we looked for an executive editor, and then I think when we also looked for an editorial board was Richard Campanella, Alicia Long, Kara Olage, Larry Powell, Robert DuPont, and Freddie Williams Evans. We picked scholars who had this great expertise, but also had a real love for the city and an accurate portrayal of the city. And I think that throughout this process, I think kept coming back to a feeling like we needed to get it right. And that if that meant another week or two of going through the proofs, or if it meant chasing an image and chasing an image and chasing an image, we had to do that. And for me, it was a really great experience because we were working with people who really cared about the city, and it sort of reinvigorated my feeling about the city, both in the content of it and feeling like, you know, one way or another, this has remained a world city despite many, many different dynamics. It really is, and trying to think through that and define it. But also really thankful that we've been working with people, not just for this book, but over decades, who care. You know, I don't think every city is blessed like that. And I think it definitely drove us to do the product we did.
And every one of them is a terrific writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They all have very strong individual voices. And that's the other great thing about the book, is that it's not a uniform read. It's kind of, they're lively long pieces, lively short pieces, and they all sound different. It's a great chorus of New Orleans voices. So I'm very happy for you all.
Thank you.
I love this book so much. We've been talking with Nancy Dixon, executive editor, and Brian Boyles, executive publisher of New Orleans in the World, 1718 to 2018, the Tricentennial Anthology. You can meet them Tuesday, December 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Thanks, Nancy.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brian.
It's great to see you.
Prime last visited us for her debut collection of poems, Lena. Today we're talking about a brand new book called Bayou St. John, A History, which tells the dramatic story of one of our most beloved waterways. Cassie Prine, I'm so happy to welcome you back.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much, Susan.
Well, this is so different. This is really quite a history. So how did this come about? How did your interest in Bayou St. John spark?
Well, I've always loved Bayou St. John just as a resident of New Orleans. I've also always had a fascination with bodies of water. And as a poet, was engaging not in the last collection, but in other work I've taken up with various bodies of water. I've always been fascinated by their history and the kind of energy that builds up around them. So I had a good friend who wrote a history of Hattiesburg, Ben Morris, with the History Press. And he thought, you know, I think you should do something like this. And I was actually very resistant. I said, I'm a poet. I don't know how to research something in a formal way, and it's not what I'm up to. And he kept saying, well, if you were going to write a history of something, what might it be? Would it be a person, place, or thing? I said, well, definitely a place. And he said, well, what about this? Oh, no, what about this? And he kept it up for a couple months. And then one day he just said, you know, you should write about Bayou St. John. And I got that feeling in your gut when you just know you have to say yes to something. And I was actually kind of irritated by it. I thought, I wasn't supposed to want to do this. And so from that moment on, though, I knew that Bayou and I had an adventure to go on together.
And you begin with the poet's perspective. You turn to poets you love at the very beginning of this book.
Yes. I was trying to make that connection between my various fascinations because it's there. It's sort of maybe hard to see for the average reader, but I wanted the introduction to be a moment where I could kind of weave that tapestry together.
And talk about the poets you drew on.
So I talk about Elizabeth Bishop, who is absolutely one of my favorite poets. She has a particular way of looking that I really admire. She doesn't rush and she takes her time and she really delves into the nuance of what she can see and gives detail of place. She writes lots of poems about place. She writes about Brazil. She writes about Canada near my home in New England. So I really relate to her description of various regions and the way she can bring a place to life.
And you adopt this poetic stance in this book that I admire so much. It's like at the end of every era in Bayou St. John's history, you invite the reader to stand at a particular spot, the intersection of Moss and Esplanade. And you tell us what we would see if we were standing there. That must have been so much fun to write for you.
Absolutely. You are correct. That was probably my favorite part of each chapter because it's how, as an individual, and I think with a kind of poetic sensibility, how I think about history. I think about it as my body in space, and what are the stories that have taken place right here? What would have been here in a physical way? And how does that lead to the character of a place? And so I really wanted to have those little vignettes at the end of each chapter where the reader could physically feel what it might have been like to stand at that spot as all these changes were taking place over the centuries.
So we're in this period where I think so many people have begun to think of Bayou St. John as really the heart of the city. You know, is it that for you now that you spent all this time exploring it? You were in libraries the whole time you were writing this book. You were walking around your neighborhood too. So what place does it occupy in your life now?
It does feel like the heart of the city. In terms of where it's located, it is kind of physically doing that, sort of dribbling down. I absolutely spent some time along the banks, and I've always loved it as a place to go and sit and relax. Those WPA era boat launches, the cement steps that people know so well. But I also loved getting to know its kind of middle stretches. I'd never spent time on Park Island, for example, until I started researching it. That interesting kind of horseshoe there, which is actually the bayou's natural bed. It was slashed through to create more of a straightaway there, but it actually did loop around. And I loved getting to know, you know, by the lake, the wetlands that are there. So in many ways, the bayou's always been a bit of an underdog, but in true New Orleans fashion, the residents of the city have always cared about it and wanted to make sure that it stayed and it wasn't filled in or covered over or left to kind of not be cleaned up. It was always the residents that wanted it to be what it remains today.
I'm curious to know, if you could see it at any time in its history, what time would you choose?
That's a hard thing to answer. I wish I could be a fly on the wall throughout its entire lifespan, but I wish I could stand on the banks in the 18th century, specifically around the Civil War era. That was the first time the bayou was used as a sort of recreational space, and there were these big rowing races, and they were advertised, and it was seen as a way for particularly, well, all social classes, but especially the aristocratic, could escape the kind of hustle and bustle and the sort of close quarters of the French Quarter and go out to this more rural space and flock the banks. And they would flock the banks by the thousands to see these rowing races. And they would dress up in their finest attire and all kinds of, there's a newspaper description, Times-Picayune description in the book that describes all different kinds of modes of transportation for folks to get out there. And I kind of wish I could have just been a member of the crowd.
I would have liked to live on a houseboat. I wish I could have seen that.
I should have said that. That would have been amazing. I think all the time about the houseboat days. There were a couple decades where that was particularly prevalent, this houseboat community kind of lining the banks. And there were a lot of, it was quite controversial for folks who were living in the neighborhood. And that would have been quite a time.
When you read this book, you think, oh, I have to go out and look at that again, which is exactly what you want this book to do, I think,
Look
at it again.
Yes, I would love it to be, for readers, a kind of guide to visiting and revisiting the space. I had no idea when I first set out just how many permutations and debates around how it was to be used and all the learning about all the bridges. For example, the Cabrini Bridge is colloquially named Cabrini Bridge. Or Magnolia Bridge used to be the Esplanade Bridge and was barged down when they built a new Esplanade Bridge in 1908. So I found that in the Times-Picayune archive and was so excited because that bridge, everyone in the city knows that bridge. It's iconic.
Yes.
And about to undergo restoration, which I know folks in the neighborhood have been fighting for. So it was really exciting for me to get to spend time unearthing those stories.
Well, they're great stories. What is next for you? I mean, really, Cassie, it's hard to imagine two books that are so different. I mean, those gorgeous poems, this detailed, focused history. You have lots of common elements in some way, that great attention to detail and that lyrical appreciation for experience. So how are you going to take this book and use it going forward in your own life?
That's a great question. I will say it's taken me a minute after finishing these two projects, which I was working on concurrently for a couple years. After both of them finished, I kind of looked around and thought, okay, so it's just me now. As I said, I've always been interested in space and place and landscape and history in relation to where I grew up in rural Maine, in relation to New Orleans, which has such a visceral feel. You can feel history here. So I would love to take what I've learned about research and dovetail it with, I guess, a more creative project, but it may incorporate some aspects of historical primary documents and unearthing the stories that haven't been told in quite some time, but doing it in a kind of poetic modality. So that's what I'm imagining is next, but
all right.
I'm just following where the wind takes me.
All right. Well, I'll be waiting.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Cassie Prine, whose new book is Bayou St. John, A History. You can meet her Sunday, December 10th at 2 at Octavia Books, and again Saturday, December 16th from 9:30 to noon at the Fairgrinds, 3133 Ponce de Leon. Cassie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities presents Nancy Dixon, Jack Davis, Freddie Evans, and Allison Fensterstock discussing and signing New Orleans in the World, 1718 to 2018, the Tricentennial Anthology, Tuesday, December 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Laura Cayouette signs The Missing Ingredient, a Charlotte Reed mystery, Tuesday, December 5th from 4 to 6 at Trashy Diva, 2048 Magazine Street, books sold by Garden District Bookshop. Liza Mundy discusses and signs Code Girls, the untold story of the American women codebreakers of World War II, Wednesday, December 6th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Heather Webb discusses and signs Last Christmas in Paris, a novel, Wednesday, December 6th at 6 at Octavia Books. Tom Andes hosts the Blood Jet Reading Series Monthly Fiction Night, Wednesday, December 6th at 8 at BJ's in the Bywater. For the final fiction night of the season, two contributors to Mississippi Noir read their work, William Boyle and Rochelle R. Smith Spears. And Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans presented by the Pirate Sally Faulkner Society, is set for December 6th through 10th with featured guests Walter Isaacson, John Gregory Brown and Carrie Brown, Andrew Burstein and Nancy Eisenberg, Bob Butler, Adam Johnson, Jeff Kleinman and Deborah Grosvenor, and many more. For information and to register, check out wordsandmusic.org. Walter Isaacson discusses and signs Leonardo da Vinci. Thursday, December 7th, 4 to 6, at High Tea and Cocktails at Words and Music. That's at the Hotel Monteleone. Tickets at falkhouse@aol.com. And again, Monday, December 11th at 6:30 at the New Orleans Advocate. Valentine Pierce reads from and signs Up to Cater, Poems. Thursday, December 7th at 6 at the Alvar Library. The Amistad Research Center presents the next in its Conversations in Color series with Lawrence Jackson discussing Chester B. Himes, a biographer, with scholar Jerry Ward and novelist Michael Allen Zell. That's Thursday, December 7th at 6:30 at the Amistad Research Center at Tulane University. This event is being held in conjunction with an exhibit of Chester Himes' papers, Lonely Crusade, The Life and Work of Chester Himes. That's at Amistad too. The Octavia Book Science Fiction Book Club, going strong for 17 years, discusses Old Man's War by John Scalzi, Saturday, December 9th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. All book lovers are welcome. Sarah Ann Harris discusses and signs The Dance Halls of Spanish Louisiana, Saturday, December 9th at 10:45 a.m. at the Chalmette Battlefield, Jean Lafitte National Historical Park and Preserve in Chalmette. The 16th Annual New Orleans Book Fair takes place Saturday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's at Cluett Gardens, Cluett and Royal Street. Ed Asner signs The Grouchy Historian, an old-time lefty defends our Constitution against right-wing hypocrites and nutjobs. That's Saturday, December 9th at 3 at Octavia Books. Photo Nola and the Stacks, the bookshop at the Contemporary Arts Center, present a special photo book focused panel and book signing featuring Carrie Mansfield, Jenny Sampson, Brandon Thibodeau, Tammy Mercure, Polo Silk, Nathan Pierce, El Casimu Harris, Richard McCabe. This takes place Sunday, December 10th from 3:30 to 5 at the CAC. The Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities presents the Winter Louisiana Cultural Vistas Party, with special guest, National Endowment for the Humanities Acting Chair John Parrish, PD. That's Tuesday, December 12th from 6 to 9 at the New Orleans Jazz Museum at the Old U.S. Mint. Today's guest, Cassie Prine, discusses and signs Bayou St. John, A Brief History, Sunday, December 10th at 2 at Octavia Books, and again Saturday, December 16th from 9:30 to noon at the Fairgrounds Coffee House. Judy Walker signs Cooking Up a Storm, Tuesday, December 12th from 5 to 7 at Kitchen Witch. That's for Taco Tuesday. Adam Gussow discusses and signs Beyond the Crossroads, The Devil in the Blues Tradition, Tuesday, December 12th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. And if your New Year's resolution is to finish or start that book, check out the workshops offered by the New Orleans Writers Workshop, starting with January intercession classes. The website is neworleanswriters.com. One Book, One New Orleans has narrowed down its shortlist for the 2018 selection. The three books are The People's Grocer, John G. Schwegman, New Orleans, and The Making of the Modern Retail World by David Capello. Roll With It, Brass Bands in the Streets of New Orleans by Matt Sacchini, with artwork by Willie Birch. And New Orleans, a Food Biography by Elizabeth M. Williams. Check out the One Book, One New Orleans Facebook page for info on voting for your choice. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.